I am Catherine LeBlanc here with the next episode of Her Success, the Stories of Franchise Female Leaders. And I am with Jennifer Herskind with Propelled Brands. She's CMO over there. And I'm so excited to talk to her about what they have going on. Hey, Jennifer.
Hey, how are you?
I'm doing well. Thank you so much for taking the time today.
Of course.
First of all, I'm super excited to talk about Propelled Brands because it's a fairly new umbrella company, right? You guys have just started that acquisition process, or not just started, but a couple of years ago got into it, right?
Sure, that's right. So last year we acquired our first brand, which was Nerds2Go, which is an emerging computer services and tech company. And just a couple weeks ago, we acquired Salon Plaza and My Salon Suites. And so they are, you know, brand new, and both of those have had great success, and they're, you know, tracking for extensive growth. And the Propelled Brands umbrella is really about working with B2B companies and franchise organizations and helping them grow and achieve their success.
That's awesome. So as I'm watching you guys do these acquisitions, and knowing that you're over there, and knowing that kind of culture is this hot buzzword, and it always has been, and it always will be, right? Because we all want to work in places that we like. But knowing that culture is so important and we're all talking about it, I'm very curious as to, you know, what are the first things you guys are doing at Propelled Brands to instill the Propelled Brands culture with, you know, as you kind of bring in a new company?
Well, you know, I think it's interesting. It's hard to force your culture onto somebody else, right? And one of the reasons that we are doing this expansion and this acquisition is because we think we do have a really great culture foundation that can extend and permeate across additional brands. So we're really in the process looking for brands that are really symbiotic and have similar energy, similar cultures, very much about people first and care and concern for franchisees. And so, you know, those are two ingredients that really have to be there as we, you know, talk to these organizations and talk to the teams that are in place running them to see if there is that synergy and chemistry from the beginning. So it's not so much about trying to push all culture on theirs. It's really trying to find that match from the beginning.
Yeah. And I bet that you, as you go along, right, you're probably picking up what you love, the best of both worlds, right? Like what you love about their culture and then, you know, what works well from your culture going into theirs.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And yeah, I would say, you know, with Nerds2Go, they're a much smaller organization. So there's more opportunity there. With My Salon Suite, they're a little bit more established and have their culture is called Flair. And so you know, we're taking some things from them. They're taking things from up. We had a great integration meeting just earlier this week to start talking about those things. And I think the fun part is what we both bring to the table and what we can learn together to continue to grow.
Yeah, for sure. Because if you're not being challenged, right, you're not growing.
Exactly.
You got to remind yourself that every now and then when you're in a challenging situation of, okay, I'm growing.
That's a good way to put it, Catherine. Reframe it as growth.
Right, right. Well, but speaking of that, what is the biggest challenge that you are facing right this second? You know, in your role, you're chief marketing officer of these amazing brands in a growth strategy. What is that challenge that you're really struggling with or a challenge that you did and you just came to a resolution? I'd love to hear about what's going on.
Yeah, I think right now with all the change, it's really helping team members manage through change and understand and set that vision for where we're going and why, you know, we're on the path that we're on and the role that they play in it. Team members get concerned, franchisees get concerned about what the future looks like, you know, now with multiple brands under the umbrella. And it does go back to opportunity, right? There's more opportunity as we grow for both franchisees and for team members. And helping, you know, everybody understand that is critically important. And then balancing workload. We're doing a tremendous amount of integration. We are creating shared services teams who work across all brands. And then we are keeping some team members specifically dedicated to brands to provide support. And it's just a lot of change. And, you know, change makes people uncomfortable. And so it really is helping educate and, you know, get the team members to really understand the vision and how they play a role in it.
You know, you mentioned at the very top when we were talking about culture, right? People first. And so it's very telling mm-hmm. that your biggest challenge is that people, because that's your main concern, right? Making sure mm-hmm. that those strong team members, and that's part of why you're able to grow so fast and to build such an amazing kind of umbrella structure is your team members. So I think that's awesome.
Yeah, I think it was interesting. It was really telling during the pandemic when, you know, the world had to pivot so quickly. And one of the things that I noticed was the culture was so strong at Fast Signs that everybody pulled together. There was no, not my job, that's somebody else's responsibility. Team members, franchisees, everybody was contributing to ensure that everybody got to the other side yep. of it. And you can't do that unless your foundation is strong, right? And so it just really shows the importance of that culture and building that people first mentality. And if you know, people don't have that today, they need to start building it right for the next hurdle, for the next obstacle that comes along, so that you know, you can pivot quickly.
Yeah. So when you're thinking about kind of building that people first culture, that culture of adversity, not just adversity, but the bud word going around is resilience, right? Mm-hmm. Everybody's got to be resilient. So the culture of resiliency, putting people first, you know, are there any kind of habits or ingrained kind of activities that you guys do as an executive team that help to maintain that culture?
You know, I think there's a lot of things. There's a personal touch to almost everything. You know, we want to make sure that if somebody's done something really well, it gets sent to the executive team. The executive team all, you know, reaches out and congratulates that person on their efforts or, you know, the success that they've had or the care that they've given to a franchisee. We celebrate birthdays, holidays, achievements, you know, that kind of stuff with a personal touch.
Yeah, recognition.
A lot of recognition. You know, that stuff is fairly formalized. A lot of company-wide meetings where we're getting together, you know, and really sharing goals and objectives and progress. And then I think the biggest thing is, you know, creating a culture that allows people to take chances, right?
Yes.
So that they are willing to put their foot forward and try and do something to help the business, to help a franchisee, and not feel like they're stepping outside of their boundaries or responsibilities in order to do so. So I'm going to steal this line from somebody else that I did a webinar with earlier this year. And they said they were focused on progress over perfection.
Yeah.
And I thought that was so just a great way to synthesize that. And if people feel like they're not going to get their hand slapped, get in trouble, get fired, you know, because they're taking a chance with the best information that they have at the time, right, in order to try and move the business forward, you know, you want that to happen. So definitely kind of continuing that, that progress. And we've been working with the franchisees too, to help change mm-hmm. that mindset. Cause a lot of times in a franchise organization, the franchisees say, well, why isn't this perfect the minute it comes out? Right.
Yeah.
And
yes, I think we've all heard that.
We've all heard that. And so we want to make sure we're not throwing shit against the wall. Right. Cause that's not what we're talking about, but you know, do the best you can with the information you have, with the tools you have, with the budgets you have, whatever you have, right, to get it into market, to support the franchisees, and then continue to listen to feedback and iterate and improve.
Yep. So I in my role at Twist Brands, part of my role is over IT. Mm-hmm. And so with that, you're always in a state of learning, but some of the kind of IT nomenclature I've picked up is the MVP, minimally viable product, which means, you know, you're going to get that product out. This is what you need, but we're going to constantly improve upon it. So don't be upset that it's minimum, right? Mm-hmm. Tell us what else is needed so that we can grow on it. So being able to kind of set expectations with the brand.
Setting expectations.
I've been successful with. So I love the kind of culture of courage that you talked about, of being able to talk freely and make sure everybody's ideas are shared and whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
I am curious if you've ever had to navigate, because, you know, I think that oftentimes as leaders, we're able to set the culture and we're able to create that culture within our own teams. But, you know, as marketers, we're always part of a bigger executive team, right? Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I'm curious if you've ever experienced or been able to work through a time where that courage culture may not have been something that was recognized across the board. Mm-hmm. Maybe it's something you just developed in your own team, and then how you might have navigated it when it wasn't necessarily embraced by everyone.
Yeah, that's hard, right? And it takes time and it takes trust. And, you know, that's the biggest part of it. And so I've definitely been in organizations where it wasn't equal across the organization, right? That there were team members that were hesitant, you know, to really lean in, or felt like their job was to report back instead of add value. And it takes a lot of work and a lot of conversation. So what I do in that, in those cases, and in a, you know, fairly recent case, was spend a lot of time talking about it with the executive teams, and how we will fail if we're not all working together and we're not all moving the ball forward.
Yeah.
And then in additional team meetings and cross-functional meetings, you know, it's very important to say, hey, every single person here is on this team for a reason. This is the reason you're here, right? To add value in these areas, yes, or even beyond those areas, right? If you have an opinion, we want to hear it. We need to share it. This is not a place where you just listen and walk away,
mm-hmm.
And, you know, buzz about it behind closed doors. We used to say in one of my groups, no hands from the grave, right?
Oh,
which means, you know, hey, you raise your hand now,
right?
There's nothing worse than sitting in a meeting, everybody talking about what's going to happen. And then somebody walking out and telling another person down the hall, oh my God, those people are crazy. That's never going to happen. That can't do that for blah, 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 blah reasons. Right. Well, that doesn't help anyone.
Right.
So it's really about keeping those conversations top of mind and, calling out contributors, you know, when they're doing that, when they are contributing, right? Mm-hmm. And making an example of what you expect to see.
Yep.
And then if you're not seeing it from people, it's like you have to go have those one-on-one conversations with them.
Yep.
To reset the expectations.
Yeah. And sometimes building that up, right? So you are here for a reason. We do need your input. You know, let's hear it.
And it does take time to trust, because if they've been in an environment where they're input wasn't valued, mm-hmm. and they were just told what to do and waited to be told what to do, it takes a while to break those habits and build new habits.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Awesome. Very relevant to the things that are kind of going on and around the media that I've been consuming. So love to hear you kind of reiterating some of the things that I've, the tidbits that I've been trying to mm-hmm. incorporate into my own kind of practices and how to stay practiced as a leader. Okay, so switching gears a bit, as a fellow marketer, for me, you know, there's always a challenge of resources in marketing, right? Because you always want to do something bigger and better, and, you know, you're pushing the envelope constantly. So a fun question around, you know, if you had unlimited resources, what is the first thing that you would do? So like, what is, you know, And this is always fun to answer when you're talking about kind of personal lottery, but like, let's say you won the lottery in business and you had to spend it on your marketing plan. What is the first thing that you would do?
Oh boy. That's a great question. I think I would lean in and get all the technology and people and expertise in data and analytics and really use that to mine and fully understand who our customer is.
Mm-hmm.
So that we can get smarter and be more efficient in the marketing dollars that we're using, right? So I'd want to know and be able to make sure that we're connecting our marketing efforts, full attribution to ROI and to sales.
Yep.
So we all know all leads are not created equal. and all things don't convert the same, but, you know, really getting that strong foundation so that when somebody says, hey, you have an extra X amount of dollars to use, or you need to go to the board or your executive team and say, hey, I'd really like to invest more here, because you're doing it with that foundation of knowledge that what you're investing in will return at whatever rate. So I would dig in very first, really hard into the data and analytics.
Yeah. And that's so smart, because that's often, you know, as marketers, we're expected to drive revenue. And so all of the things that we're looking at are, okay, how is this going to drive revenue? How are we delivering new guests, adding to check, or increasing frequency, right? Those are the three pillars that I always think about when kind of creating that marketing strategy. But without knowing our guests, you know, those strategies are kind of cherry picked from the shelf. And so it's very hard, though, to get those budgets approved to know the guest, because that's not necessarily driving the revenue. But to your point, it could drive more efficient buys and really stretch your marketing dollars even further.
It's a longer term play, right? And so, you know, we're working on it now within our companies to make sure that we're putting those connections in place. But it's hard. And oftentimes when it's a small piece of somebody's job, it, you know, stays a small piece of somebody's job. And so if you had, you know, that if you won the lotto, I'd have a team of people. That's all they were doing is mining the data and coming up and going, this is what we're seeing. And this is where, you know, where it makes sense to invest and doing that. So exactly.
Yeah. So I know that your career path it has been so impressive, and you've been at so many huge brands. One thing I'm always curious about,
which, by the way, don't necessarily come with big budgets. So
No, I know that. I know that. Look, everybody always thinks that you have more money than you do.
I know.
And we always get to peek behind the curtains and say, oh, really? This is what you're doing with that budget. But impressive nonetheless, because we do it with less, right? I'm always curious about, you know, when I'm thinking about my own career path and how I move from role to role, you know, it's always interesting to me, the things that I was looking for earlier in my career are different now. Right. So when you're navigating, and you've been in leadership roles at these major brands, I'm fairly new to the leadership piece. What do you look for when you're looking for a new role, or when a new role is brought to you, or a new opportunity is brought to you? What are some of the things that you consider when making a decision of whether or not it's something you should pursue?
Yeah, I think early on in the first part or good part of my career, before I got, you know, into a senior leadership position, it was really about building out my skill set, my toolbox, my experience, right? So I never wanted to be in a position where if I found the job that I wanted, that somebody would go, oh, she's not qualified, right? She's never had experience in consumer packaged goods or quick service restaurants or, you know, business services, right? And so I fairly prescriptively got as much experience as I could out of each company I was with, within marketing departments and marketing responsibilities, and then looked for how do I broaden and get into those different industries and different types of companies to continue to broaden that experience. And so I think is good leaders learn over time that it's about the interpersonal skills and the experience that you have, and you can teach anybody a job, right? Hire the right person, teach them the job. And so I wanted to make sure that as I continued to move along that, you know, nobody would say, oh, she, you know, she doesn't have that very specific experience, so she couldn't be qualified for that job. So, you know, go into a lot of different industries, always in marketing and always tacking on additional new responsibilities in marketing so that it was building that toolbox.
So similarly, you know, my marketing career path jumped a lot from industry to industry, and then also from discipline to discipline. For me, you know, the biggest kind of surprise turn that my career took was when I got into PR for a little bit. And it was not for me. but I'm curious if you experienced anything along the way that you were surprised that you liked as much as you did, or you kind of, you know, said, oh, maybe that's not for me.
I always knew I wanted to be in marketing. My dad was a corporate executive. My mother was an entrepreneur. I loved consumer behavior and psychology, and those were my favorite classes going through school. And so I think as I got into different areas of marketing, I was really passionate about product development and business development, because you could take something from a concept and an idea all the way through to market and really see the impact of that and the results that it had. So I liked being able to really see those results. I'm very, very driven by results. So I would say that's like the area that I'm super passionate about, because it is, you know, tied into that behavioral, you know, psychology element. I will tell you, I do way more spreadsheets and analytics and budgeting than I ever thought I would in a marketing role. I'm a little dangerous. I love to do marketing math. And so I stay pretty tight with the finance team.
Yeah.
To be able to do that. So that's kind of an area that I think probably surprised me, that I don't hate it. I wouldn't trade marketing to go into finance, but, you know, have gotten to be able to navigate enough and understand it enough and ask the right questions about it and really partner with the finance team. And so it's become something that I think is a critical part of my role. And it's not one that I loathe to check off the list, right, anymore.
Yeah. Well, and I think that, you know, I love that you said that, because that is a realization that I think many marketers come to later in their mm-hmm. career as they move up. And I think that the successful marketers come to that realization because they know they have to walk into the meeting with numbers. You know, that they're going into a meeting with people who know their numbers and live and die by their numbers. And so as the marketer, you've got to bring the cheerleader, you've got to bring the happy and the pretty pictures, but you also have to know your numbers in order to maintain credibility with the people in the room, but also in order to drive results, right? And to make sure that you are contributing in a way that impacts the benchmarks for the company.
That's right.
And I think that it's interesting because, and you know, maybe things have caught up, but certainly in the beginnings of my career, that was never brought up and never really encouraged until I got to a certain level when I was in those board meetings or those leadership meetings and caught the drift.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And I think too, the landscape has changed. So, marketing aspects of marketing have become much more measurable, right? And so there's that layer that's changed and made that important. But it does help us quantify the impact that marketing has on the business. And that's, you know, that's what boards and executive teams are looking for.
Right. No, that's a good point. Okay. So speaking of kind of things we learn later in our careers, what do you do to stay on top of your profession and industry and continue that learning process?
Oh, well, and that's changed in the last year. So, you know, it's usually industry conferences, you know, staying on top of a lot of news alerts, networking. In this last year, I spent a lot of time trying to connect with CMOs and other businesses and talk to them about, you know, what I'm doing, if they have insights around it, what they're doing, you know, just shared experiences. Which has been really helpful. So that's been great to connect with, you know, people I might not have otherwise, right? And so some of that's through sister companies, some of that's through my executive team and people they know. And some of it starts with them needing help from me, and some starts with me needing help from them. And then you find out that you have these touch bases every once in a while. And it's just good to have that dialogue and conversation and bounce something off appear.
Yep.
Yeah.
Going back to your career path a little bit, I remembered a question that I had. So you talked about your kind of drive of learning different skill sets within marketing discipline, but then also different industry types. Mm-hmm. One thing that's pretty consistent though throughout your career is franchising and being in franchise marketing. Mm-hmm. So what kept you within that kind of segment?
So I think it's a little, it's about passion and care for people. Right. And I think one of my very first jobs, not my first job, but one of my first real jobs was with the UPS store before they were the UPS store with mailboxes, et cetera. And I was in charge of business and product development and trying to come up with new products and services for the franchisees to sell inside their four walls to their customers. And we had several thousand single unit operators. And it really opened my eyes at the very beginning of my career into the fact that, you know, they have put their savings into this business. They have the future of their families, you know, on the line. And I felt a tremendous amount of responsibility in my job for what I did in terms of how it was going to impact those franchisees. Even to the point where I was asked to roll some products out that I knew were not ready, had not been vetted fully, that we didn't have the information we need. And I said, no. Like I felt like I was personally on the line for that if I was going to be the person in front, you know, pitching it and doing it. And so I backed up and said, it's not ready. Let's put together a plan to get there quickly. Right. And check off, make sure we've checked all these boxes and then let's go roll it out. And so it wasn't super popular, you know, when I said that.
No, never is.
but, you know, built the roadmap to get the company there and to, you know, get it out to the franchisees and put the work in up front. To ensure that it would have success going forward. And so that was a very, I think, pivotal moment in my career in terms of, you know, understanding that impact that we can have on somebody's business and their personal livelihood. And I've carried that with me throughout. It's fun to contribute in that way and be part of somebody's personal success and growth.
Yeah. Yeah. I couldn't agree more. Okay. So switching gears a little bit, I want to know a little bit about what you're curious about right now. So that could be, you know, work related, marketing related, franchise related, personal, you know, what are you kind of curious and interested in right now?
I am curious about how we are going to continue to come out of the pandemic and the impact that's going to have on people, culture, business, you know, going forward, because there were seismic shifts that happened, everybody working from home. There are great things about being able to work remotely or work from anywhere. I think there's a lot that we might lose in, you know, working from everywhere. And there's only so much connection you can have over a video, right? And so much spontaneity of conversation. And so I am curious about how this will play out and the impact that it's going to have. I think there's going to be a lot of case studies that happen, you know, that look back at this time to try and understand, you know, the positives and the negative impact, you know, that it's having. And I hope that people will continue to see the value of coming together in person.
Yeah. Yep. Certainly we do too. It's Swiss Brands.
Yeah.
We want you to gather. And so if you had a crystal ball, do you have any kind of predictions of what you think, you know, what that get, I guess, when you're thinking about, what you're curious about, right? You're curious how culture will be continued in the remote workforce.
Yeah.
So do you have kind of a crystal ball of what you think is going to happen in 5 years? Or where we'll be?
I don't, I wish I did, cause then I'd have all the answers. Right. You know, we're trying to navigate it and continue to provide flexibility that comes from working remotely, but also think about what are important times to pull groups together in person and have that, you know, brainstorming, collaboration, interaction, you know, building that trust, right? And building that camaraderie. So, you know, during the pandemic, I was always looking for ways to bring the teams together, whether it was a virtual happy hour or sending, you know, small little gifts to their homes, just to try and keep, you know, engagement happening.
Yeah.
I hope that there will be a swing where it will come back And maybe it just ends up somewhere in the middle. You know, there's a lot of conversation about if you are just doing work and have your head down doing work, well, you can do that from anywhere.
Right.
But, you know, if it requires something else, well, that's where we should be in the office, in person, you know, doing that work together. So I think I hope we'll end up in a blended environment that works. The hard part is when some people are remote and some people are in, that makes the logistics even more difficult. So
it does. I agree. What do you miss the most about being in the office?
What I miss the most about it? I think the ability to just pop down the hall and have a conversation with somebody. And so, you know, over the last few weeks, we've had, you know, the opportunity to have a lot more people in the office, and it's nice. I think of something and I walk down the hall and I'm like, hey, you got a minute, right? Let's like, figure this out. Instead of 18 emails back and forth, you do it in like 2 minutes. And then it's like, oh, and by the way, how was your weekend? And there's some personal conversation of it. And that's so hard to do. It seems silly, but it's so hard to do when everybody's virtual, because I can tell if I walk down the hall that, you know, somebody's door is closed or they're in a meeting and they can't be disturbed. I can't see that necessarily as readily when everybody's remote. And so you don't capitalize on that spontaneity of conversation. Now, I know a lot of people are like, well, that's why I'm getting so much done.
Right.
Nobody's interrupting me, you know, all day long.
Right.
So there is a balance to it, but I do miss that stuff that just happens naturally when you're face to face.
Do you have a favorite communication tool that you guys have implemented at the office since you guys are remote?
We were lucky. We implemented RingCentral, which is a Zoom company, in February, the beginning of February, right before the pandemic hit. So we were very thankful that we had that roadmap already set. We're using, you know, video. We use the chat functionality, you know, inside of it, the Teams functionality inside of it. So, you know, we're really inside of the RingCentral portfolio for those things. I struggle with trying to manage information in too many channels.
Yes.
Right. And so, you know, every time a team member or IT or anybody is like, hey, like we can do it over here, I'm like, ah, la, I already have one chat stream and one and voicemail and email. And like, that's just a personal issue for me.
I think that's real. You know, when you think about, you know, and when we're thinking about franchisee communications too, that's something that, you know, I'm trying to navigate and think through, because we have email, we have Slack, we have text messaging, we have our phones and our voicemails, but then we have all the other messaging apps, right? You have GroupMe and WhatsApp and all of that happening. And then when you get to the franchise communications, you have the intranet and you have Facebook and you have, you know, and it does become a point of, okay, there is only so many channels I can check.
Right.
So like we've all got to figure out where
and which ones we're using.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And I mean, we honestly, I know that franchisees set up their own Facebook groups and that type of thing. And we, it's too much for us as a company to monitor.
Yeah.
And so we always say, hey, if you want the knowledge and the expertise from the company, you know, come to these channels in these areas. We have a resource site, you know, we put out a newsletter every week, you know, it's like, we're trying to keep some narrowness to the channels to ensure that we're serving them.
Yeah, no, I couldn't agree more. Okay. So what have you been most surprised about in the last, let's say, 3 to 6 months?
What I've been most surprised about, I think longer than that, I've been surprised about how well everybody adapted, you know, and managed through remote working. In the last 3 to 6 months, I think I'm most surprised. Well, I don't know. I think a little bit of the hesitancy to still get together, you know, in person.
Yeah.
And I don't want to politicize it or anything, but but it's just, you know, I don't know. That's my biggest angst of all of this is We'll never get back to normal.
Yeah.
But
and you won't know, if you do, and, unless and, you do.
Unless right? you do, unless you do, unless you encourage it and do those things,
right?
And put effort towards it. So yeah. So in the last 3 to 6 months, I'm surprised. We just did a big team week, and I was surprised at the number of people who were local who participated remotely instead of mm-hmm. coming in to be face to face for team week. And so that's a challenge, you know, and a struggle that we're gonna have to figure out, you know, going forward, how to keep the engagement. I worry that team members, while they are probably very productive at home, start to become invisible, right? Yeah. And, you know, I'm fearful that of what's going to happen.
Yeah. You
know, and that, because visibility is really important.
It is. And I think that, you know, as companies, right, faceless companies, you know, people are going to have to make decisions around what is required and what's not. But then also, you know, our workforce values flexibility. So how do we all meet in the middle? So I think, you know, some of your kind of discussion today really identifies those big challenges that are facing big companies right now. You know, how do you maintain and retain your workforce by staying flexible, but creating company culture and meeting people where they want to be? Some people want to be together and some people don't. So how do you make that all work together? And nobody knows, right?
Nobody knows. And that could be the next shift in the next phase of, you know, people changing jobs and careers, right? Because that blend that has to be created to provide the flexibility, but still, we're still all running businesses and still, you know, have to provide results. So there has to be a blend of that. And that might not work for everybody. The final answer, or the answer that keeps evolving, right, in terms of how we're going to do it, might not work for some people.
Yeah.
And that might just have to be okay.
And
right?
That's okay.
And that just might have to be okay.
Right. Yeah. I'm with you. You can't please everybody. okay. So this is a question we love to ask folks who come on the podcast, because our goal with the podcast really is to expose up and coming female leaders to kind of how other female leaders have made it and how they've navigated some things on their career path. So if you had advice to give your 18-year-old self, what would it be?
I would say lean in, you know, definitely be visible. Look for the opportunities to extend beyond just the basic requirements of your job. And so sometimes it's like asking for more, and really, really focus on being a team player, right? It's not about you. It's about the impact that you can have on the company and on other people in your organization. And so if you focus on that, I think the rest comes. Right. Yeah. If you're looking around going, well, Susie just got promoted and somebody got that opportunity, and how come I'm not, right? You're focused on the wrong thing. So I always believed in just getting in, kicking ass in my job. And the rest, you know, people recognize that, right? They, you know, they recognize the work and the effort and the contribution that you're making as a team player. And then those opportunities come, you know, and you get more. So I think, you know, really leaning in and being that team player and making sure that, you know, you're asking for those opportunities.
Yep. No, I couldn't agree more. That's great. Great advice. Especially, you know, when I do feel like sometimes you feel overlooked and it's really your work product and that impact. And it, you know, it won't get overlooked. It, you know, you just have to have patience and grace for the patience.
And sometimes the person you report to might not be the right person to recognize it, right?
Yeah.
And so recognize that, and it's not to say go around that person, but make sure you're getting exposure outside of of, you know, your small immediate team.
Yep.
Or your directs, right? I mean, I think one of the, I think in my career, when I was at Pizza Hut, I led product marketing teams for the organization. And so I got to work with somebody, cross-functional department team. So, you know, every department was represented on the team that I was leading to bring a pizza product from concept to test market to national launch. And that exposure took me outside of just marketing, right? And so I got exposure to a lot of different departments, a lot of directors at that time, a lot of vice presidents at that time, to senior leadership, to executive committees and franchise committees, and, you know, everybody who had to check the boxes and approve everything we were doing along the way. And that was invaluable. In addition to it giving me a broader view outside of marketing and more business, general business understanding, it just gave me a tremendous amount of exposure to a lot of people in the organization who were like, oh, I know Jennifer.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So those opportunities, if they're available within your organization, are important to try and pursue.
Yep. I think that's great advice. Well, thank you so much for your time today.
Of course. Gosh, that went fast.
Yeah. Well, you're great. And then I know that folks will be able to enjoy this discussion and really some poignant stuff coming out. So thank you, Jennifer. I really appreciate
it. Good. Of course. I appreciate you reaching out, and it was an enjoyable conversation and loved it.
Great.